And welcome into the Brad Sesmatch Show. It's a beautiful day, June 10th, 2014. My name is Jared Cohen. That is Gregory Esposito.
Gregory? Only my mother calls me Gregory.
And now me. So great company, right? Wearing a nice purple shirt today. It's Greg Esposito of Suns.com. And Jared Cohen filling in for Brad Sesmatch today, who is enjoying his 25th wedding anniversary. Big milestone for them, and he is doing what he should be doing, and he's not sitting in this chair, so we are taking his place.
Happy wife, happy life, they say.
Yeah, and
I assume it's true. I haven't figured it out yet.
You haven't figured it out yet? I'm starting to figure it out, and then there's times where I'm like, what are you thinking? So we're filling in for Brad today. A lot of great stuff to get to. Pedro Gomez joins us for his weekly segment. A lot of talk about around the Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball. We'll also be joined by the head coach of AZ United SC, Michael De La Russo. He'll be joining us for his weekly segment as well at the top of next hour. But first, let's get into the top stories for today, which is brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino, located in the beautiful White Mountains just outside of Pine Top in eastern Arizona. Head up and enjoy beautiful eastern Arizona weather. That's the Honda Resort and Casino. Greg, let's start off at the top talking about the Arizona Diamondbacks. We like to keep it local here on Sports360AZ.com as well as on AZ Central Sports and White Mountain Radio. The big news that came down yesterday, Trevor Cahill, once a big piece brought in as a result of trading a major prospect in Jared Parker, among others, has officially been designated for an assignment last week, yesterday, has 10 days to decide whether he wants to go to the minors or just basically opt out, and the Diamondbacks would owe him upwards of $18 million before his contract is all said and done. That's what the Diamondbacks face here as we sit here today with the once promising young pitcher of this rotation.
Well, when you're designated for assignment in our jobs, that's usually a good thing. You get to go do a job, you get to go cover something in baseball.
Yeah, that's true.
Not so much.
No.
Not exactly what you want. One of the options you didn't mention, the Diamondbacks could trade Trevor Cahill. If they pull that off, that would be amazing. They'd probably have to pay a large amount of the salary still owed to him, which is roughly $17 million over the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's just not a good situation. When you trade a guy like a Jared Parker along with Ryan Cook, Colin Cowgill, you expect more in return than a guy that, you know, had a few decent starts and then just struggled. And sometimes this happens in baseball. It's not unheard of that a guy just can't figure himself out after starting off hot in the league, and Cahill did that in Oakland. But anytime Billy Beane picks up the phone and offers you a young pitcher, you probably should think twice, because right, the guy's not all about giving up young talent, you know, that is still quality that he could potentially get at a good price.
Let's talk Trevor Cahill. He had a great break out onto the scene for the Oakland A's, was fantastic, made the All-Star game. His whip was below one, which for you cyber nerds and analytics people out there, that's about as good as it gets for a pitcher. But then he started to get blown up a little bit in his second year with the A's, and that's when he got traded. So there was a lot of people that were like, oh, maybe he needs a new scenery, maybe he needs a new direction. That's when the Diamondbacks made the move for him. Conversely, Kevin Towers would tell you that, well, maybe he wouldn't tell you this, but he would think to himself and not tell you, Jared Parker, you know, there might have been things that they saw in him that they were worried about. Sure enough, since that trade, he's had two Tommy John surgeries. So It's one of those things where it's a double-edged sword, but the problem that you run into is I know this is a hot button with you, you just shipped out prospects before seeing what they could come into and could come up with for a guy that has proven at the major league level, but also has proven to struggle, and it ends up coming to bite you in the backside.
Well, if you're looking at this deal in a vacuum, I don't necessarily have a problem with the fact that they traded Jared Parker for Cahill. It's the money that you wind up investing into Cahill that becomes the issue, because now that Cahill can't figure himself out, you've got to potentially eat if he doesn't go to the minors and then reemerge as a member of the major league roster. You've got to eat $17 million. And as a Diamondbacks organization, they don't have room for error. You cannot miss big on guys, and that's what this did. And okay, one deal, if it's just the Cahill deal and you trade Jared Parker, fine. But then you're looking at Trevor Bauer's doubt, Justin Upton, even Ian Kennedy. I mean, Chris Young to a much lesser extent. There were young, talented guys, you know.
Tyler Skaggs.
Tyler Skaggs. There were guys in this organization that, and young guys that could have helped filled in the back of the back of that lineup. It's unfortunate, the situation that they're going to have to eat $17 million now.
That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen filling in for Brad Sesamad, who's celebrating his 25th wedding anniversary today. On the season, Trevor Cahill, before this came about, was 1-6 with a save, a 5.66 ERA, 26 earned runs, and 41 and a third innings pitched, 19 games, 4 starts. We will see if he remains in the Diamondbacks organization or if, like Greg mentions, he'll be traded or released, and that money will go to waste. Let's go over now nationally the NBA Finals, Game 3 set to tip tonight between the Miami Heat and the San Antonio Spurs. And just to set the tone a little bit of what's coming up, LeBron James, he talked about how this is a much more mature team this time around than it was in the past NBA Finals runs.
That's just my mindset. That's been our team's mindset, you know, since we got together. You know, just try to stay even keel. I think our first year together, we kind of struggled with that, you know. And you learn from experience. And, you know, from that, you know, loss versus the Mavericks, we've been able to just kind of just understand that, you know, tomorrow is the thing we need to focus on.
And then Manu Ginobili, who talks about how this team could have very easily been down 0-2 if not for cramp gate or air conditioning gate, as Eric Sorensen likes to point out. They could be down 0-2, so there are some things that they need to clean up as this series shifts over to Miami.
Details. Every possession counts. I mean, we took care of the ball much better than in game one. And we were in a good spot. I mean, if LeBron gets hot and starts making shots like that, it can happen. But we were still in the game.
Manu Ginobili there talking leading up to Game 3, which tips tonight in Miami. Your thoughts on how this series has transpired? Are you surprised? Has it lived up to anything that you anticipated with the rematch of these two teams?
Oh, there's no surprise here. Everybody expected this to be a close series. You expected that there may be, you know, some things that come up that are surprising, cramp gate being one. But this comes down, as it always has, the series comes down to, does LeBron James hit his long jumpers? Because that's what the Spurs defense is going to give him. How does the Miami defense continue to contain Tony Parker? They did it last game by putting Dwayne Wade and LeBron at different times on Tony Parker, because you need a bigger body on Tony Parker. You're not going to do it with Mario Chalmers. And then it also comes down to, is LeBron going to get help from Chris Bosh or Dwayne Wade? And I think Chris Bosh is the key to this series, because if he can hit those corner threes, he can space that floor and he can open things up for LeBron a little bit more. That's going to be a big thing. But I expect this to go 7 games. I expect it to be back and forth the entire time. And I don't think home court until that 7th game really makes much of a difference in this series.
No, it's very true. And one other player that I feel like has been a factor against the Spurs, if you will, has been the way they've been able to neutralize Kawhi Leonard. Mm-hmm. This is a guy that in the last time these two teams met last year in the series was really his coming out party for the nation. Those in the Western Conference and those who have gone up against the Spurs in the games or days or years prior to that series, that finals last year, had gotten to know Kawhi Leonard a little bit and what kind of player he is and the dynamic he brings. But it was that finals that he had last year against the Heat that was really his coming out party. He's very good player at home for the Spurs, kind of like how Danny Green is. And both of those guys, Danny Green to a lesser extent, but Kawhi Leonard have pretty much been neutralized in both games. And I think that's a big factor, because when those two guys are clicking, man, it creates so much more for Duncan and Parker and Ginobili to do what they do and not have as much on their shoulders. And the Spurs have more of that team dynamic that they pride themselves on when those two guys, especially Kawhi Leonard, is moving.
Well, yeah, the difference between these two teams is if you neutralize LeBron James, the Heat are in trouble. If you neutralize any one specific player on the San Antonio Spurs, there's five more behind him that are going to step up and mm-hmm. fill in that gap. That's yeah. that's the difference between these two teams. So it's going to take a team effort defensively from Miami to stop and neutralize across the board, where if San Antonio figures out a way to neutralize LeBron James, series changer right there.
Of course, of course. And that's the biggest factor. Just to back up my point here just briefly, Kawhi Leonard, game 1, 3 of 5, 9 points. Game 2, 3 of 9. 9 points. So that's really not the Kawhi Leonard that we've gotten to know. But I agree with you completely. This has been and always will be about neutralizing LeBron James. No doubt that it was neutralizing Jordan was the key. That didn't work out. We saw the rest, 6 NBA titles. Neutralizing, Hakeem Olajuwon. Yep, couldn't do that. Shaq couldn't do that. Patrick Ewing couldn't do that. He won 2 NBA titles. That's going a little further back than I think we anticipated. But if you can neutralize the stars in a championship series, that's your key to victory. The question, though, is can you actually do that? And speaking of neutralizing stars, the Rangers are having trouble doing that with the stars of the City of Angels, the LA Kings, who have now opened up a 3-0 lead in the Stanley Cup Finals. Everyone was excited. Even you to an extent, even though you don't have as much interest in the Stanley Cup Finals as you do other things, was excited about the New York LA dynamic and what that could do for the sport. Sure enough, it hasn't really panned out, I think, the way people would have hoped, especially hockey faithful. And now they're staring at a sweep, and this series could be done before it even begins.
That was an impressive segue. I was worried that the Dallas Stars were in the finals, and I did really poor research.
Yep, no.
It is the LA Kings.
I wanted
Kings.
To make
All
sure
right.
I clarified myself before you jumped in and said, wait, the Stars are in the... it would have been a better segue if the Stars were in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But
3-0 lead for the Kings, it's over. I know in the NHL, you see 3-0 comebacks sometimes, 3-1 comebacks more than other sports. It's not happening in the Stanley Cup Finals. Jonathan Quick is an unstoppable force right now and an immovable object. He's both. And the Rangers had their chance in Game 1 and Game 2. They blew it. They gave up leads. They just couldn't finish it off. The Kings are in the driver's seat. They're going to take it. The problem with the NHL is the rating. Like last night, I went to try to watch that game. I turn on NBC. It's not on NBC.
No. Yeah, not until the weekend.
It's on NBC Sports Network, which as a sports fan, I kind of know where it is. I have to find it. But ratings are so dramatically different between the NHL and the NBA right now. NBA Finals, last game, 15 million. NHL Stanley Cup Final, last night, 6.4 million. Mm-hmm. That's a huge discrepancy in audience. That's their bigger problem than, especially they have the two biggest television markets in the country in their final. The NBA dreams of a New York-LA matchup in a finals. And if they got it, the ratings would be unbelievable. The NHL is touting 6.4 million.
When you're on the NBC Sports Network, you're not going to get a common fan channel searching coming to your game to get more ratings.
Ask Michelle Beadle. That's why she's on ESPN again.
That's a good point. Pedro Gomez coming up next. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen filling in for Brad Sesmat today on Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, and White Mountain Radio. Pedro Gomez coming up next.
Time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sesmat.
Welcome back in. It's the Brad Sesmat Show. Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito filling in for Brad, who's celebrating his 25th wedding anniversary, so he trusted us to take over the driver's seat for today. And now comes a segment that's one of my favorite segments each and every week that Brad does on the show. He visits with Pedro Gomez, ESPN MLB insider, who is, you're getting your World Cup on. You're getting ready for the big event that's kind of coming up here. You're in New Jersey right now, covering a little Portugal soccer. Is that what you're doing, Pedro?
I am. They have a friendly tonight against Ireland. It's their last tune-up before they head to Brazil. I am not going to Brazil, but I'll be home tomorrow and... filling in the way we all do.
There you go.
Is there a better term in sports than friendly? Like, it seems like such a foreign concept to us around here. Well, Pedro, Greg Esposito, Trevor Cahill was designated for assignment here in Phoenix. Kind of a tricky situation for the Diamondbacks. If he doesn't wind up in the minors, they're on the hook for roughly $18 million over the next 2 years. Is this something that this Diamondbacks team can really recover from with that much money being left on the table?
Well, I mean, just remember a few years ago, Russ Ortiz, I think he signed like a $30 or $32 million deal. And after the first year, the Diamondbacks decided, you know what, it's just not working. And I think they ended up eating around $22, $24 million. So it's absolutely something that they can. It's not something that you want to get used to, especially if you're not a large market team, because if you swing and miss on big contracts and you're a smaller market team, it's really difficult to overcome that. Now, you know, Kendrick has shown that he's willing to part when he thinks the mistake has been made. And in this particular case, I'm not certain that it's final, because it does seem like Cahill may accept a minor league assignment, so we may still see him later this season, possibly next year. You know, maybe he can get whatever needs to be fixed. But it's very difficult for a franchise that's not in L.A., New York, Chicago, let's say, or St. Louis, to overcome this kind of a mistake in a contract.
Pedro, Trevor Cahill is kind of like a one-hit wonder. You mentioned if he had that great year, but you mentioned he goes down to the minors, works some things out. Do you think that there is something fixable with a guy like this? Because they keep talking about how it's all mental with him. He's shown some spurts of being able to pitch fairly well with the Diamondbacks, but for the most part, it's just been a lost cause. Is even a minor league stint for him going to even solve what he has to bring to the table?
I think it'll depend on Trevor Cahill. It's something where mental things can be fixed. I know that back in the 80s, Dave Stewart, who was mentally a mess when he was with the Dodgers, the Rangers, the Phillies, and they all let him go. He got to Oakland. He got in the right situation. And Dave Stewart and Tony La Russa, who were both in the Diamondback organization, by the way, straightened him out to the point where he became a four-time 20-game winner, an MVP of the LCS, a two-time World Series champion. He won three because he won one with the Dodgers when he was a rookie. But he was a main integral part of two World Series champions, one in Oakland, one in Toronto. So it can be remedied. It's not easy. The mental part, the physical part, you can rehab and boom, you're ready. The mental part is a lot more difficult to get straightened out, but it can be done, and there are cases where it has been. I mean, you know, the his name escapes me now, but the pitcher for the Cardinals who turned into the outfielder.
Rick Ankiel?
Ankiel. Another perfect example of somebody who had huge mental problems on the mound, but he didn't let that dissuade him from having a successful major league career. And so there are ways to fix the mental side. That's not to say it's 100% by any means, but there are ways to do it.
Just a little over a month away from the trade deadline in baseball, is it too early to kind of figure out exactly what the Diamondbacks are going to be looking to do, especially with La Russa just joining the front office?
My understanding is that any option is on the table. That they're willing to at least listen to anything that might be out there. And, you know, when you're in a situation like the Diamondbacks where you know, the season is pretty much over, and there are some pieces there that might be intriguing or interesting to some pennant contenders, I think you'd be foolish not to listen, because a lot of clubs can make themselves over with good end of the, you know, the trade deadline move, and you can absolutely set yourself up to start contending as soon as next year. So I would think that they'd be very willing to at least listen to any and all offers.
Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito filling in for Brad Sesmat today, talking to ESPN insider Pedro Gomez on the show right now. You talk about some of these assets. You're a general manager of an opposing team, Pedro. Who are some of the assets that you look at this team and be like, you know what, I'd love to bring in a guy like this and deal some of my prospects midseason to make a run at something?
I think it would depend on the club. Obviously, if you're hurting in a certain area, you would certainly look at specific needs. But Martin Prado, Mark Trumbo, Didi Gregorius, Aaron Hill, you'd be foolish not to at least, you know, Miguel Montero, if you're a contender and you're maybe one piece away from putting you in a position to possibly win a World Series, you know, general managers for years have said, you know, you make a deal with the devil if you think you can win that year. And clubs have done it historically. So it would not be surprising. It would depend on a specific need that a team would need, that would have. But I think any and all options would be on the table. Gerardo Parra, who knows? Who knows?
What do you think should be the end game for this Diamondbacks franchise? Is it trying to get back to 500? Is it just trying to figure out if what pieces are worth keeping, where they should go? What should fans really look forward to the remainder of this season?
I mean, getting to 500 is going to be very difficult. It's not impossible, but it would be very, very difficult. I think just putting a competitive club on the field and basically seeing what pieces, like you said, what pieces do you want to keep? What do we have in our organization that we cannot afford to let go of for fear of them blossoming elsewhere and for us missing out on that? And that's the thing that the best ball clubs do, is they look at their own organization better than they do other organizations. And they make sure not to trade the pieces that will be there down the road to help them win. And I think you'd have to say the Diamondbacks probably have not done a great job of that over the course of their history.
ESPN insider Pedro Gomez joining Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito here on Sports360AZ.com. Let's shift gears nationally a little bit, Pedro. There's a lot of very intriguing prospects that are making the jump up to the majors. Notably, Gregory Polanco with the Pirates is called up and supposed to be in the lineup today. You look at Oscar Tavares, Singleton over at the Astros, who are here in Arizona, as well as Springer, who's in town with the Astros. There's been a lot of intriguing and big-name prospects that have gotten the call this year. Is this just a product of every year you kind of see this with some big-time prospects, or does it seem like there are some big future pieces, future stars that are being called up all at the same time this season?
No, I think it's one of those cycles where maybe there's a higher than normal rate of young up and comers who are ready to make that jump. And that's always a great thing for the game.
Sure.
Because the game always recycles and recycles out the old and cycles in the brand new. And that's, I think, we're seeing maybe a little bit more than normal, but that's a great, great thing to see if you're a baseball fan.
You look at people like to throw the comparison games out there. Like, I mean, I've seen with Oscar Tavares, people comparing him to Vlad Guerrero, things of that nature. Who are the guys that are going to be like coming up and they're themselves, like Mike Trout was when he first got called up, and even Bryce Harper a little bit before the injury, where they got called up and they were the first of any kind. They created their own stamp on, this is who I am and I'm going to be something moving forward. I feel like Polanco could be that type of guy who's just getting the call up today.
Polanco could. I know that when Trout came up, and you know, he was only up for a few weeks and then he got sent back down, but then when he came up the next time and he stayed for good, there were a lot of scouts, older scouts, who said, that's Mickey Mantle. That's exactly what Mickey Mantle looked like when he first came up. So if you're being compared to somebody like Mickey Mantle,
sure,
or Vladimir Guerrero, you've got a lot to live up to. But, boy, they're putting you in high, high esteem and high praise. So I think that, Polanco certainly is an intriguing piece. I think Springer, who's already been up for about 3 or 4 weeks with the Astros, absolutely looks like the real deal. And Singleton, it's a little too early, obviously. He's only been up a few days, but he could fit into that mode as well. And last year when Matt Harvey came up and blossomed for the Mets before the Tommy John surgery, I mean, you see it all the time with guys that come up and you're like blown away with their skills. And I think you are seeing probably players come up now who are in fantastic shape just because of the knowledge of what working out can do, which maybe wasn't around 15, 20 years ago as much as it is now. And that's why I think you're seeing such a great crop of young players come up and really blow people away with their skills.
Well, Manny Machado grabbed a few headlines over the weekend.
Yeah.
But is it?
Well, not for the right reasons.
Definitely not. Is it a case of immaturity, or is this a real problem for the Baltimore Orioles?
If you're the Orioles, you certainly hope it's just immaturity. I mean, Manny is somebody that is still very young. I think he's 22 years old, maybe 21. So you're just hoping that it is immaturity and that he let his emotions get the best of him, and he's got to learn to control that aspect. But if it's not immaturity, if this is something that is ingrained in him, then you're probably not going to see someone who is going to be able to capitalize on his skill set and his talents, because those are the type of things that can absolutely take you out of the game. And it has happened throughout the history of the game. It doesn't matter how great you are. If you cannot control your emotions and your temper, there's usually not a place for you in the game. So it's something where the Orioles, I'm sure, knowing Buck Showalter, have absolutely sat him down, talked to him, and explained to him why he cannot act this way. At the end of the day, how he acts is entirely up to him. But in talking to Machado over the last couple of seasons, I don't think that it is something that is a long-range problem. I think it's probably just youth taking, not having experience and the youthfulness in him just taking over and his emotions taking over and getting the best of him.
Always great stuff, Pedro. Have fun with Ronaldo out there in New Jersey, all right?
All right, boys. Take care.
All right. That's Pedro Gomez, ESPN Insider, joining Greg Esposito and myself, Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat today. Interesting stuff about Cahill, about how, there's been examples in the past of guys who have dealt with the mental aspects of things like this that Cahill has dealt with, that have gone down to the minors or figured something out and have able to salvage somewhat of an MLB career. It's kind of an angle with this that I really didn't even think about.
Well, that and the La Russa connection to at least one of those guys who has gone down and kind of fixed himself mentally to come back and have success. It's all about willingness, though. Does he wind up in the minors, or does he decide that he doesn't want to accept that assignment? Everything I've read, it sounds like he is leaning towards being willing to, but that's the big question. Is he willing to go down there and try to fix it?
No question. And there's no guarantee that he's back in a starting rotation if he decides not to go to the minors. If I'm him, work some things out, collect my paycheck, and try to salvage what sort of an MLB career you've got going. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat today. Coming up next, we've got some lawsuit money, NCAA, and all that stuff put together equals lots of fun topics. We're going to get into that a little bit. Filling in for Brad Sesmat today on Sports 360 AZ, White Mountain Radio, and AZ Central Sports. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen, and we're coming right back. Money, lawsuits, court hearings, and the NCAA, all that stuff mixed together just isn't really that positive, but that's what we're getting into this segment. I'm Jared Cohen, that's Greg Esposito, filling in for Brad Sesmat today on The Brad Sesmat Show on White Mountain Radio, AZ Central Sports, and of course, Sports360AZ.com. So the Ed O'Bannon case continues today. Ruling came down yesterday that $20 million settlement was related in the video game aspect of all this. A player involved in that suit, Sam Keller, former Arizona State and Nebraska quarterback, was part of that lawsuit that results in players getting money in the video game aspect, where players had similar features, the same number, skill sets, everything except for their name. A $20 million settlement was reached, and that's just scratching the surface of what the Ed O'Bannon case has to offer us here that's presently going on.
Yeah, I think the more interesting case, that was the settlement in a related case. The more interesting case is the one that Ed O'Bannon's testifying in right now. He and 19 other plaintiffs are asking a U.S. district judge for an injunction that would allow college athletes to actually sell their own images for television broadcasts and rebroadcasts. So he was on the stand yesterday and basically said he never went to UCLA ever to be a student. He was there specifically to be an athlete and strictly to play basketball, and he did the minimum he could in class. Now, usually I'm completely on the side of the college athlete in this. It's the NCAA is big business that's basically standing on the shoulders of these college athletes to make money, make billions. They'll claim, okay, free education, but obviously that's not a value to a lot of these guys. It bothers me that Ed O'Bannon's coming straight out and saying, whoa, 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 I wasn't there for an education at all. I was there to play basketball, but now I'm angry at the system because I got to go to school. I got to play basketball. It got me into the NBA. But since I didn't study and I don't really have a backup plan now, now I'm a little upset about it. I agree that
that's the stance I've had from the beginning. Not to interrupt you, step on your toes, but that's been the stance that I've had on this from the beginning. While some of these other things he is testifying for have merit and are interesting, but that notion is kind of what's had a bad taste in my mouth from the beginning.
Well, yeah, if you're going to go there, you should be going there both to try to obtain an education to prepare you for life after athletics, because even if you're one of the biggest names out there, injury can happen. You could just fail at it, and you need to have a backup plan. That bothers me about the O'Bannon case, but that doesn't mean that the NCAA isn't extremely flawed.
Sure.
The real problem here is there's no legitimate alternative option for guys like Ed O'Bannon and football players and some of these other major sports. Baseball, there is. You can go in, you can be drafted in baseball out of high school, play in the minors, make money, and focus completely on your game. Mm-hmm. Other sports, there aren't. That isn't the case. And I think that's what needs to be developed. I don't think you can fix the NCAA at this point because you're putting a Band-Aid on it. There's no real way you can figure out how to pay every college athlete and then figure out, well, do we pay one school that's better? Do those athletes get more money? Is it the same across the board? How do you decide what's fair, quote unquote? You can't. It's too big of an entity, too flawed of a system right now. And I think the answer is to find an alternative for guys like Ed O'Bannon that have no desire to actually obtain an education to go play professionally while keeping an age limit. You need a legitimate minor league system in football, in basketball, in these other sports where these guys can go play, they can make their money, they can work on their craft. And yeah, they won't make the millions that they will when they get to the NBA or the NFL or whatever the case may be. But if you give them the legitimate option, and then you say you either do this or you go play college athletics for 2-3 maybe the full 4 years, and you have to study, you hold them to academic responsibilities, that's the way you fix the system, where they agree that yes, I am here to be a student and to be an athlete, otherwise I will go down this other path to be a paid professional before I get to the big major NBA, NFL, whatever, because these guys at 18, 19 aren't prepared yet to go. Most aren't prepared. There are obviously some examples, but most aren't prepared to go directly into these pro sports. So they need a minor league system so we can avoid all this.
So when does it get to the point, though, when one option or the other seems to be the more fast track to the NBA and the other just almost comes completely dissolved, and you don't get any of the top players or any of the usable players on one side or the other? I mean, there's a reason why the D League or a minor league system in basketball, I feel like, just hasn't really taken on any steam, because I feel like it either works for a player or it doesn't work for a player. But if they're not ready to play basketball right away at an elite level, they have a lot of trouble getting back up to get to that level again. And if it means they start in the D League and work their way up, I mean, hockey is very similar. Hockey, if you get drafted and you're a good elite player, you'll get a shot at the major club right away. And if not, you're going to be sent to the minors and you're really going to have to work your way out of it to get into a rotation. I feel like basketball is the same way. If you get a shot right away and you're good enough, you're going to get your shot and teams are going to utilize that. But if you're down in the D League or a minor league system, you have to work a lot harder to get up there. Whereas baseball, you're thrown into the minor league system right away. You have to pay your dues. You have to work through it. And then you get your shot at the big league. Because I feel like NBA teams will see a spurt or a flash of greatness on a player and be like, you know what, this guy could succeed at this level. And then it becomes a total failure and it becomes mental. And then he gets sent to the D League and can never get out.
Well, the way you have to do this is there has to be an agreed upon, it still has to be like the 1 or 2 years that you impose. You have to be this many years out of high school to be able to enter into a league. I think you have to work it that way where there's parameters. And what's wrong with hard work? I don't think there's any issue with these guys having to go down. If they want it, like Ed O'Bannon says, he was strictly there to be an athlete, not to be a student. If you want to spend all that time and work on your game and get paid somewhat for it, a minor league system's the answer. You got to figure out a way to work that. And to your point about, well, does that kill college athletics? It works in college baseball. You still get talent.
Yeah, but college baseball is not at the – college baseball has an interesting system that I think they should use in the NBA.
I agree, and that's the kind of system I think that they need to go to.
If you commit to play at a school and you go, you are there for 3 years.
Yeah.
If you're not, then you I think that's the answer. Whether or not it's the right move or not for the NBA remains to be seen, but I think that's the answer.
Well, these are two different subjects.
Totally. I know, and I'm sorry to get sidetracked.
Well, no, I'm just saying there's two different subjects here. Are we worried about protecting the game in college sports? Is it about protecting the quality of that game, or is it about fixing corruption and figuring out a better system?
And that's
those are two
really
different
what
questions.
It is. Yeah, and that's really what it is. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today on the Brad Sesmat Show on Sports360AZ.com, White Mountain Radio, and AZ Central Sports. Ed O'Bannon, as you read through this article about what transpired as he took the stand yesterday, he brings up an interesting point going off the part that you found was so interesting about how if a person's image or whatever is used for graphics or anything along those lines, ads, commercials, that should stem all the way down to high school athletics as well. And you know that's a big thing what we do here at Sports360AZ.com. We're just as much into the high school coverage as we are the college or the pro. That's an interesting topic because there could be a full domino effect. He even went on to mention the Little League World Series and ESPN and that agreement that they have, even though he feels that Little Leaguers should not be paid. He wanted to clarify himself. But there's a slippery slope here that if you do this for college athletes, do this for high school athletes as well, and so on.
Well, if you want to completely kill amateurism, yeah, sure, go for it. But then it gets into the, why are you playing sports? Are you playing it for the joy of what you're doing, especially
exactly.
when you're a kid? Or are you doing it because it's some way to make money? And I think in the Little League example, the high school example, you're playing it partially because you love that sport. And when the money gets into it, it corrupts a lot of it. It changes the entire structure. And then are you going to let high school athletes pick wherever they want to go to school because this school offers more money because it's a private school, or I prefer to play for this coach? You have to blow up all the current restrictions and rules, and then you're going to have one or two schools, just like in professional sports, that are dominant because somehow they found a better way or more money to recruit a player. It at some point, you have to say, it stops here. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think if you separate it and you have your college athletics that is amateur for the amateur athlete, and you give an option for professionalism and to make that money, that's the way you can separate it and you can make it work. But if you start going into high school and all these things, you completely destroy the fabric of what a lot of what we've built sports on in this country are about.
One problem that I feel like isn't being spoken of is you have a lot of student athletes that do want to be students too.
Yeah.
They do want a shot to take advantage of their education. And those types of people's voices aren't really being heard through all this because they are brought to school on a full ride to be an athlete and to participate in athletics. But they want to take advantage of the academics as well. And those people, I feel like, are just kind of being swept under the mat a little bit because those types of players are out there. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat today. Coming up next, Hard Knocks. The Browns aren't doing it. A lot of good stuff around Johnny Manziel going on right now, including a Billy Madison reference. I love it. That's coming up next. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today on Sports 360 AZ White Mountain Radio and azcentralsports.com. Welcome back into the Brad Sesmat Show. The big guy is celebrating his 25th wedding anniversary, so he's not here. Instead, we are. My name is Jared Cohen. That's Greg Esposito. We're filling in for Brad today on AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio, and Sports360AZ.com. Going to talk a little Johnny football. Why not? Everyone likes to talk about him and the antics that go on. You and I are more of the opinion of who cares? You know, he's going to do what he does. And Jason LaConfora on CBSSports.com wrote an immaculate column over the weekend about basically the same topic. He's going to do what he does, and the people that scrutinize him and can't stand him for it are really kind of hypocritical because they secretly would love to live the life that he's living right now. To me, it's always been about what can he do on the field. He's lived up to it on the field. Now he goes to a new level of play, and if he tears it up at the NFL level, once again, I don't think Browns fans would care. I don't think NFL fans would care. Love him or hate him, if he's getting the job done on the field, then it doesn't matter what he does off the field because it's his life, and as long as he's not breaking the law, he's going to do what he does.
Well, it's not like he hid this in college either. Everybody
right?
knew what Johnny Football was all. You don't get a nickname like Johnny Football unless you're the kind of guy that Johnny Manziel is. And people accepted it and embraced it, but now all of a sudden, oh, well, we need the quarterback in the NFL to be one of the smartest and quietest and well-respected and introspective. Who cares? If this guy, like you said, can do all this, come out and play football in the fall, then so be it. You brought up before the show, if he turns into Matt Leiner, then there's a problem.
Yes.
But this is not something, I guarantee the Joe Namaths of the world back in the 60s were exactly like this. But since there was a little mystery about them because they weren't constantly having pictures taken of them and there wasn't a 24-hour news cycle to fill, that mystery made it, ooh, Joe Namath is Joe Cool. There's like this air about him. Everybody wants to be him.
Yeah, Hollywood Joe.
Yeah, Hollywood,
people celebrated him.
Yeah. But now, because we see every little aspect of it, like Johnny Manziel floating on a rubber swan with a champagne bottle.
Stop looking at me, swan.
The Billy Madison effect. All of a sudden, we have some awful aversion to it. No, who cares? This is the guy that he is. Let him be him. We embrace Charles Barkley for being outrageous and saying what he thought. You know, he's a byproduct of the age we live in and the scrutiny that comes from that age.
And we draw parallels to Johnny Manziel's good buddy, LeBron James. LeBron, you know, I've always been the type of person, Espo, that when my team isn't in the finals, in the playoffs, I like to see greatness. I know there's a lot of people like me. Or there's people that just can't stand to see greatness and always wants them to lose. But I'm not the type of person that's going to be like, well, LeBron James has already won, so I'm not going to root for him. I'm going to root for the Spurs, even though I normally hate the Spurs because they caused so many problems for the Suns back and so many years ago, yada, yada, yada. I love watching greatness. Whether that's seeing them win or whether that's seeing them lose, I like seeing incredible performances by the best the sport has to offer. I love seeing Peyton Manning in the Super Bowl. I love seeing the Yankees in their heyday in the World Series. Not because I love the Yankees or because I'm anti anyone else. I like seeing the elite of the elite playing at the highest level if my team isn't in it. And that's what's entertaining and that's what brings the best out of the sport. So all these people that just nitpick and just hate on LeBron James and the Johnny Manziels of the world because of what they do off the field or little things to show little signs of them failing or not being Michael Jordan or not being or the great the thing that drove me nuts. Sorry to get on a rant here. People were saying, imagine what Larry Bird and Magic Johnson did when the the Garden was 97 degrees when that AC went out and they were able to play through it, or what Isaiah Thomas did against the Lakers on a broken foot. Like, it's a different situation in a different scenario at a different time. Either way, it's these people are still human. And the fact that you can nitpick on people for the littlest things and say they're not the great player that we think they are because of this little situation and so would have gotten through it, I think is a joke. And it drives me nuts. And Johnny Manziel, in the same situation, being in a spot where because he's swimming and floating on a swan, drinking some champagne, oh, well, Dan Marino wouldn't have done this, and John Elway wouldn't have done this, and Joe Montana this. Like, give me a break. If he gets it done on the field, then that's all that's relevant. As long as he's not breaking the law, I don't care what this guy does. If he's successful on the field, that's what he's out there to do. And if he's not, then you can really put the adequate scrutiny on him like we have done on Matt Leinart.
I agree 100%. And there's a difference between rooting for greatness to lose in a sport and not liking a certain – I didn't like Michael Jordan because at 9 years old, he took a championship from a team I loved, all right? That I held that grudge. But I didn't sit there and try to destroy the human being, Michael Jordan. Right now, we're in an age that's obsessed with looking at the guy at the top and going, how do we pull him down as fast as possible and destroy him in every way possible? The things that are said, the scrutiny and the ridiculousness of the way that these guys are scrutinized is unbelievable. LeBron James is human. He had a cramp. It's painful, and you can't walk on a cramp. But now all of a sudden, he's a horrible guy because he couldn't play through it. Johnny Manziel is out there living his life the way most 21-year-olds that just came into a lot of money and are completely famous would live their life.
No question.
I don't think any of these people that scrutinize Johnny Manziel would want us seeing the crazy pictures from their days in college or people following them around saying every little thing that they've done. You know, and Johnny Manziel can't win either way. He's scrutinized for going and partying in Las Vegas, for being this wild, crazy, you know, guy that spends all this money, then scrutinized for getting on a Southwest plane and sitting in the middle seat because he's a normal guy again.
Yeah.
He can't win either way. LeBron James is the same way. It's just this perverse obsession we have now in the digital age to just blast people like that.
No question. And people sitting behind their phones and not looking them straight in the eye and saying these things. You mentioned an interesting point about the Johnny. This is the thing that I took away most from Locke and Fora's column was Johnny Manziel is a man of the people. Because if you I mean, I'm sure you've been out. I had my time when I went out, Old Town, Vegas, all that stuff. And if there was a celebrity around, there's a VIP area. And he mentions you have to sign a waiver that you can't talk or say anything or do anything that might make the player look bad. And you have to basically have a background check to be able to stand in the same vicinity as a superstar. Whereas Johnny Manziel is right there amongst the people, partying, taking pictures. Hey, come party with me. Like, I'm having a great time and I want you to be a part of it. And I don't care who you are off the field. And I don't care if you take a picture of me and post it on Instagram. You know, that's the type of person that we should like and should be supporting as a man of the people and not really the dark side or the evil empire like he's made out to be.
Well, at 30, I'm going to sound like the old man with this, but yeah. Remember when there was a time where you saw an athlete and you were like, wow, I'm actually in the presence of greatness. I'd like to just go shake the guy's hand, say, hey, thanks for being entertaining through the years, you know, and shake his hand, maybe get a picture. That's that. Now it's about, ooh, I wonder what dirt I can I get a really good picture of him doing something ridiculous that I can post on Twitter and then up my followers or maybe get on a blog that I can do. It's such a weird change in dynamics of the way we think now. It's cool to meet somebody that has provided me with hours of entertainment throughout the years. It's now, oh, well, you know, this or that. Like, when I met Charles Barkley a few years ago for the first time, I went back to being that 10-year-old kid. It was, hey, thanks for being as entertaining as you were. Thanks for providing me with a kind of just a passion for sports through what you did. It wasn't, hey, let's figure out a way to bring down Charles Barkley, but that seems to be the mentality now when they run into people like Johnny Manziel.
Well, one thing that we won't be entertained with is the fact that Johnny Manziel will not be featured with the Browns on Hard Knocks as they turned it down recently. I'm with you. You know, it's a weird and kind of unfortunate time we're in right now that that we just can't really seem to wrap our heads around, you know?
Yeah. I know we're up against it, but on the Hard Knocks thing, no problem with the Browns turning it down. I just hope the NFL doesn't put the Rams in it, because then that becomes kind of hypocritical. With, you know,
the Oprah
situation there.
No question. That's a very interesting topic. Well, good stuff right there. We talked to Pedro Gomez, interesting stuff about the Diamondbacks. We talked a little Ed O'Bannon on the NCAA lawsuit. A lot of good stuff. You can check back on sports360az.com. We'll have it up in the podcast center. Always enjoy Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat today on sports360az.com, AZ Central Sports, and White Mountain Radio. Sesmat Show on Sports360AZ.com, White Mountain Radio, and AZ Central Sports. The big guy, Mr. Sesmat, celebrating his 25th wedding anniversary. So Greg Esposito and Jared Cohen filling in for him on a special landmark day for him and his wife.
Does that make us Mrs. Sesmat's gift?
Uh-huh.
We're the greatest anniversary gift you can get your wife.
I couldn't think of anything better. And so you at home, if you're listening, if you need, you know, just time away from your job, and just need to spend time with your wife,
we'll fill in.
Just call us and we'll do whatever. We're versatile. We can do whatever you need us to do. We'll figure it out. Just call upon us. Call toll free and maybe you'll get us half off right now if you call in the next 90 seconds.
Except accounting. I can't do math. You're in trouble if that's what you do for a job.
Yeah. No, there's no question
about it. Sorry to hijack the open there.
No, I'm glad you hijacked it. So, excuse me. Coming up, we got the head coach of AZ United SC, Michael Delarusso, coming up here to talk a little Arizona soccer and World Cup soccer. And you know what? As we're mentioning it, that is the top story on our mind as we bring it to you this hour, which is brought to you by Mesa Gateway Airport. Mesa Gateway Airport, where it is just plain easy. We are now joined by the head coach for our weekly segment. Always enjoy talking to the coach, Michael Delarusso. You're joining Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito, filling in for Brad Sesmat today. Coach, how are things going on your neck of the woods?
They're going well. How are you guys?
We're doing pretty good, So, Coach, we talk about what's upcoming this week. We have a big game coming up against Dayton, coming off a game where you had a 1-1 draw against Sacramento. 21,000 fans in attendance at that game. Talk about what you need. You mentioned you need a little bit more offense over the past few games. Talk about what you need to do in order to get that offensive spurt coming across your first season here.
Yeah, Saturday was fun. It was good for the guys. It was a great experience. Obviously, we wanted to walk away with 3 points, but leaving with the tie, I think we were pretty happy. We created a lot of chances, as we have in the past. It's just getting that that final piece and that final execution. But the guys have looked extremely sharp the last couple of days in training, and I think they're pretty excited to get out tomorrow and hopefully score some goals.
You mentioned tomorrow night in Peoria, you guys are hosting Dayton. What have you kind of seen on film of that Dayton team, and what do you expect that you're going to have to do to get a victory?
They're a good team. They move the ball pretty well. They're pretty organized. They got a few guys in on loan from Columbus Crew that give them a little bit of dynamic movement up top. So we're going to have to be disciplined in the back. But at the same time, I think we're going to have to get after them. We're going to have to make it a high-tempo game. They're coming off of two road games out in California and then having a drive here. So hopefully we can pick the tempo up, go at them, and dictate the pace of the game.
This is Coach Michael Delarusso, the head coach of AZ United SC, joining Jared Cohen and Greg Esposito, filling in for Brad Sesmat today on the show. We like to know, this is a new team. We like to get to know the players a little bit. You know, the faces behind the year one with AZ United SC and some of the guys that are, you know, coming up the ranks, making names for themselves and for the team. So who are some of the guys, or maybe a guy to spotlight, that has just seen big improvement from the start of the year to about right now that deserves a little bit more recognition than he's getting in year one?
You know, I have two guys. They're both ex-FC Dallas products, actually. A kid, Bradley Valdez, who's our attacking midfielder. He's a very good possession player, has a lot of great attributes, and he's really bought into the system and doing quite well for us. And then the young man, London Woodbury, He was playing up top for us as a sub quite a bit. Came in, had to play him at center back last game, and honestly, he was the man of the match. He was the best player on the field. He played extremely well, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do for us tomorrow. But those two guys, along with a few others, have really stepped up and tried to take this this challenge on and grasp it and hopefully move on from here.
And if you have an incredible name like London Woodbury, you have to make something of your life, don't you? I mean, that's just too solid of a name, right?
Exactly. We've told him all along. So, you know, he's living up to it right now. So he's doing well for himself.
Very good, Coach. It's Coach Michael De La Russa joining us on Sports360AZ.com. Let's shift gears to the World Cup a little bit, Coach. Coming up here any day now, Jozy Altidore scores two goals for the U.S. in a World Cup tune-up on Saturday. How important is Jozy Altidore for the U.S.'s success once they get to Brazil?
I think it's huge. I think just his confidence level, the team has a little bit more confidence in him now, and you saw even after his first goal. I mean, granted, it was just a tap-in, but that's what he needed. You saw the monkey come off his back right away. You saw his movement. You know, when he got the ball, he's going at people. He just looked like a completely different player. And honestly, you know, we need a striker like that, you know, because at the World Cup and with our group that we face, you know, chances are going to be limited. So we need a guy that's really going to take advantage of them. And I think Josie's in a good mind frame right now, and he's excited, and I'm excited to see them play their first match.
You know, and talking about his mind frame a little bit, you know, he was such a phenom coming up, thought he was going to be the face of USA soccer. And, you know, there's some people out there that believe he might not have or hasn't yet lived up to the hype that he has around it. And then you learn of the stories, that the things that he's dealt with since being in Europe and overseas, the racism and the, you know, bananas being thrown on the field and just horrible things like that, and the stuff that he's had to deal with. You know, I feel like he should be more of a success story of what he's accomplished based on what he's had to deal with than he really has at this point. Do you see a similar scenario?
Yeah, I definitely do. I would argue with people that say that he's been a failure or hasn't lived up to hype or anything along those lines. I think he's had an incredible career. I think he's, you know, been able to balance things off the field, because obviously over in Europe you deal with that sometimes. But, you know, he's starting for the U.S. national team, our starting number nine. He's done extremely well over in Europe. I don't classify that so much as a failure.
I think
he's excited. I think he wants to use this World Cup to break out a little bit and to kind of prove to people, you know, what he's all about. But he's also a guy that's really good for the team. Every time he talks, you listen to him, he's talking about the team. And I think it's good for the U.S. to have a guy like that, for sure.
It's the head coach of the AZ United SC, Michael De La Russa, talking a little soccer. World Cup coming up here as well. So getting away from the U.S. just a little bit, it's soccer purist yourself. What country do you think has the best path to the Cup as we're about to get things started?
I mean, one of the obvious choices would be Brazil. I think a lot of people think they have pressure on them, this, that. I don't see it that way. I see them using this to their advantage, for sure. They obviously, every group is pretty tough, but I think they match up pretty well against the teams that they have to deal with, and the amount of talent that they have, it's going to be extremely fun to watch.
And, Coach, before we let you go, just talking about your team this weekend, your AZ United SC squad needs to do this blank in order to be victorious tomorrow night against Dayton.
We need to score more goals than they do.
Fair enough. It's that simple, right?
It is.
Thank you, Coach. Thank you so much for your time, as always. Each and every week, we appreciate it, and we look forward to talking to you next week as well.
No problem. Have a great day, guys. Take care.
You too. That's AZ United SC head coach Michael De La Russa joining us for his weekly segment, talking a little soccer with the World Cup coming up here. And, you know, let's while we're at the top of the hour, let's branch off into some of the other things that are going on in the world of sports. We've got the big story that came down yesterday here locally with the Arizona Diamondbacks designating Trevor Cahill for assignment, which means a flurry of different things. We'll talk to Pedro Gomez about that here coming up soon. But your takeaway, Greg Esposito, and I'm Jared Cohen filling in for Brad Sesmat, on the things that are set in motion now for a guy like Cahill and the contract that he has on, and what the Diamondbacks have to do to try to salvage something out of this.
Well, it's a lot of money. That's what comes to mind. That's a lot of money, $17, $18 million that you may potentially have to eat with that contract if he decides to move on, if he doesn't decide to accept the assignment to the minors. So that's just not a mistake you can make in the Diamondback situation, is eating that kind of money. They're going to have to figure out a way to bounce back from that.
No question about it. No question about it. And as we look forward to the Diamondback situation right now, or that you look at their starting rotation on how it's just really been a nightmare, and the different things that have gone against them and have gone wrong from day one since they had their bus breakdown in Australia on their way to play the Dodgers, and actually had to walk the rest of the way before they played their exhibition game against Team Australia, in which they lost. So it's just been that kind of season. But you look at some of the pieces that they have in the starting rotation. Patrick Corbin aside, he's dealing with the arm trouble. But is there really, other than Archie Bradley in the hopes that he comes up and is the phenom that everyone hopes that he is there really anyone in this rotation that really gets you excited?
Well, look across the organization. I'm not sure that there's anybody currently in the bigs that gets me super excited. Paul Goldschmidt is a great player. I appreciate Paul Goldschmidt's ability to hit a baseball and hit it very far. But he is the San Antonio Spurs of position players. He does the job well, but there's not controversy, but it's consistent. And there's nothing sexy in sports about consistency with very little flair, if you will. You know, he's a good player. That's the face of the franchise right now, and I think that's part of the problem. There's no draw. In 2004, team wasn't good, but you knew you were going to see Randy Johnson. You were going to see one of the greats. You know, there was a draw still. Right now, very bland. It's a very vanilla team, and I think that's part of why you see Tony La Russa in here now, trying to figure out what are the next steps, what do we do, and how do we get this team to a level where even if we're still struggling, there is interest, there's intrigue. Right now, it's lacking.
No question, no question. And it's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today. Shifting gears more onto a national level, the Spurs and the Heat play game three. The series is tied, even though the Heat have somewhat outplayed the Spurs for basically all but one quarter in the series, and could have found themselves down 0-2 going into Miami. They have a big game tonight. And also last night, Stanley Cup, Kings take a drastic 3-0 series lead. Jonathan Quick has been the factor in this one. He talked last night about how the Kings still have work to do despite the commanding lead over the Rangers.
It was a big win. You know, we came here to win the first one and then go from there. We were able to do that tonight. And obviously, as we all know, the fourth one's always the most difficult. So we got a lot to prepare for and get our legs back under us and get ready for the next one.
And they've seen how tough it was for the Sharks to get that fourth one early in the season, the playoffs, to get to for the Kings might not even be where they're at right now. But before we go for this segment, I want to get your thoughts. Richard Sherman in the news. What's new other than Johnny Manziel? But for a very interesting topic, before we go here for this segment, he wants, instead of him being on the front of Madden, he wants his whole defense to be on the front of Madden.
Richard Sherman's another guy that gets just picked apart for no good reason. I actually really like him, and I like this. He's saying, hey, yeah, I was voted, but this is a team sport. It's not just me. I'm not just the only guy. He wants the Legion of Boom on the cover, and I like it. I like it a lot. He's actually asking fans. He said EA is kind of giving him a hard time about it. He's asking fans to petition to get the entire defense from Seattle on there, and they deserve it. They're world champions. I really like that move by Richard Sherman, but then again, I like all of it. Anybody that can add a little something into a game, even when he's jabbing with Patrick Peterson, is good.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. That's Greg Esposito. Always good stuff from him. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today. Going to talk a little baseball, get a little bit more into Trevor Cahill's situation and the mess around the Diamondbacks with Pedro Gomez, our ESPN insider. That's coming up next. Again, that's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen on Sports360AZ.com, White Mountain Radio, and AZCentral.com.